Nehemiah chapter 12. Invite you to turn there, and we're going to read from verse 27 through the end of the chapter, and a story of the great celebration of the wall completed around Jerusalem. This chapter gives us a lot of detail. It certainly tells us about the great circumstances of this day that was very special, or days carefully noted by the historian, the scribe, the writer of the book of Nehemiah. Many believe was Ezra who actually wrote the book of Nehemiah, but part of Nehemiah has the flavor of Nehemiah's story himself. So between these two men, both who were leaders, Nehemiah more as a governor type organizer of the building of the wall, and Ezra more as the spiritual leader. But the dedication day was important. It's a reminder, if you go back and you read earlier in the story of the dedication of Solomon's temple, which is a even larger and more detailed and lists, and even more so than Nehemiah, of this great day. So I would say this is the second most recorded dedication in the Bible, the first one being Solomon's temple and the wall of Jerusalem in Solomon's day, but especially the dedication of Solomon's temple. And this day in Nehemiah was a reminder to the people of that connection they had with God, in the same way that way back there in their history, in their story, was the connection and closeness to God. The whole event was a reminder to these 5th century BC children of God, many who had come back from captivity in Babylon. It's a reminder of the days of King Solomon and King David and what they had once been in Israel. And now, here they are hundreds of years later, and they were getting back toward the place that their country, their nation, their identity, their people had with David and Solomon. And they realized that it was much different than back then. The temple was smaller. Their territory was much smaller. But yet this was a great day for them. It's a great day of remembering back, and in a smaller way than it was back then, to remember that they belong to God, and this dedication day belonged to Him. Let's read it. I'm going to read the whole passage, beginning at verse 27. It has a lot of names in it, and I'm not so good at names, so if you guys know names better, it's all right with me. You can just correct me, or you can come read it right now if you want to. I don't care. Verse 27, at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, the Levites were sought out from where they lived and were brought to Jerusalem to celebrate joyfully the dedication with songs of thanksgiving and with the music of cymbals, harps, and lyres. The singers also were brought together from the region around Jerusalem, from the villages of the Netophites and the Beth Gilgal, and from the area of Geba and Azmavoth. And for the singers had built villages for themselves around Jerusalem. When the priests and Levites had purified themselves ceremonially, they purified the people, the gates, and the wall. I had the leaders of Judah go up on top of the wall. I also assigned two large choirs to give thanks. One was to proceed of the wall to the right toward the dung gate. Hoshea and half the leaders of Judah followed them, along with Azariah, Ezra, Meshulam, Judah, Benjamin, Shemaiah, Jeremiah, as well as some priests with trumpets, and also Zechariah, son of Jonathan, and son of Shemaiah, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micaiah, the son of Zachor, the son of Asaph, and his associates, Shemaiah, Azarel, Milalai, Gilalai, Maai, Nethanel, Judah, and Hanani, with musical instruments, prescribed by David, the man of God. Ezra the scribe led the procession. At the fountain gate, they continued directly up to the steps of the city of David on the ascent to the wall and passed above the house of David to the water gate on the east. The second choir proceeded in the opposite direction. I followed them on top of the wall together with half the people, past the Tower of the Ovens to the broad wall, over the Gate of Ephraim, the Jeshanah Gate, the Fish Gate, the Tower of Hananel, and the Tower of the Hundred. As far as the Sheep Gate, at the Gate of the Guard, they stopped. The two choirs that gave thanks then took their places in the house of God, and so did I, together with half the officials, as well as the priest, Eliakim, Messiah, Miniamin, Micaiah, Elioni, Zechariah, and Hananiah with their trumpets, and also Messiah, Shemaiah, Eleazar, Uzi, Jehohanan, Micaiah, Elam, and Ezer. The choir sang under the direction of Jezrahiah. And on that day they offered great sacrifices, rejoicing because God had given them great joy. The women and children also rejoiced. The sound of rejoicing in Jerusalem could be heard far away. At that time, men were appointed to be in charge of the storerooms for the contributions, first fruits, and tithes. From the fields around the towns, they were to bring into the storerooms the portions required by the law for the priests and the Levites. For Judah was pleased with the ministering priests and Levites. They performed the service of their God and the service of purification, as did also the singers and gatekeepers, according to the commands of David and his son Solomon. For long ago, in the days of David and Asaph, there had been directors for the singers and for the songs of praise and thanksgiving to God. So in the days of Zerubbabel and of Nehemiah, all Israel contributed the daily portions for the singers and gatekeepers. They also set aside the portion for the other Levites, and the Levites set aside the portions for the descendants of Aaron. What a great and beautiful description of a great day or number of days, I don't know how many, of this time of rejoicing for the Israelite people, for the people of Jerusalem and those that lived around it. This truly is a great day in their history. Dedicating the walls of the city was very important to their identity. It was a connection for them to the God who made it possible. The dedication of the walls of Jerusalem was to them once again committing themselves and pledging themselves to be the people of God. In earlier chapters, and last week, last Sunday night, we talked about the steps that they had taken toward renewal. They had confessed their sins. They had come together, and in the prior chapters, talked about what they had done in order to promise God that they would serve Him and they wished to be His people again. We had talked about how they had come together, and Ezra had read the law to them, and they heard the law and they committed themselves to it. They also committed to do rightly and justly among the people, and some of the abuses that were going on. They promised that that would stop. And they went through a time of prayer and seeking and fasting. And then they come to this day of dedication. It's important to their identity. It's important also, you would think, to their sense of accomplishment, that they had accomplished something in 52 days that they had not been able to do in 170 years. I mean, Nehemiah came on the scene with this heavy heart and this call of God about the deplorable conditions of his home of Jerusalem, his ancestral home of Jerusalem, and the people had rallied to that, and they had managed to do something that for 170 years really needed to be done, and that is to make their city safe again. So it was a day to celebrate a sense of accomplishment. Can you imagine 52 days it took after all that and all the years, and I'm sure the generations that had come and gone, of being told about how the city used to be and what it was like, and they're able to accomplish this. So this was a great celebration. But even most important is this was an act of spiritual renewal for them. It was a part of their revival. It was a part of their renewal. I notice here in this chapter how meticulous the lists are, the details are. They're preserved. It's almost like a time capsule here in the recording of this event in this day. Now you really got me curious where there's a time capsule around here. I'll be having to bring my Maddox in. I don't know. But this is a written time capsule of, no, I wasn't serious. Don't worry, Charlotte. No. A written time capsule of this special time. It is a grand event. I mean, we just know that by reading this description. This is a day that will be remembered for a long time, and it would be retold for generations to come. And there'd be comparisons to Solomon's day and David and that dedication, like I said earlier, and probably later on when the temple is rebuilt again and Herod does that, they'll remember back to the dedication of Solomon, and they'll remember back to this dedication day as well. There had to have been an incredible amount of planning and coordination to bring this off with everything that's involved. In fact, when you read the chapter, it kind of reminds me of chapter 3 and the details of the building of the wall, and especially the incredible amount of people that had to be involved in that, and how all these families and clans and towns were involved in rebuilding the wall and defending Jerusalem during that time when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem were trying to discourage them and then even attack them and try to bring an end to the rebuilding of the wall, and all the people it took to defend the city during that time. And chapter 3 is like one list. Well, this reminds me of that, how detailed all this information is. Just about all of Jerusalem and most of the towns around Jerusalem, and we don't know, we're just speculating, but of all the area of Judah and people that lived within any near distance, Jerusalem were probably here on this day of dedication. I mean, this is the biggest event that they will ever, ever experience in their lives. And chapter 3 kind of talks about the rebuilding process and all the people that are involved. Chapter 3 gives these lists of the people that worked at this section of the wall. I think if I remember right, when we studied that, there were, I believe it was 53 sections that were named, and which families and clans helped, or what town was responsible for this little part of the wall, then another one, this part of the wall, and this part of the wall. You go all the way around, roughly 2 to 2.5 miles of what would have been the wall at that time, divided by 53 groups of people, numbering who knows how many, probably anywhere from 20 to 50 to hundreds of people who might have been assigned, or their town or their families or their clans, to rebuilding the wall. That's a lot of people when you begin to add them up. We also talked about last week the number of people that came back from Babylon. Over 30,000 is listed in the prior two chapters. 30,700 or something like that. Just think of all those people who came back from Babylon. They were with Nehemiah. They came back with Nehemiah, probably that list physically with Nehemiah. They came back in some kind of caravan or a procession, being allowed to return. And all of them would have been involved in this. They would have been, they were part of the team. And I don't know specifically how they were individually involved, but they would have been. Then you have all the people that already lived in Jerusalem, most of whom supported what was going on, you know, so you had tens of thousands of more, and then people lived in the towns around Jerusalem and through Judea, and how much of Israel, I don't know for sure because it doesn't tell us, but there could have been upwards of a couple hundred thousand people easily who would have been still connected or somewhat connected to this rebuilding of the wall and the dedication that takes place. You have families and clans and towns and leaders. It truly was an incredible amount of people, an incredible amount of leaders in order to bring this about. And many of them are named here. And I read many of the names that were there, especially the priests, the Levites are very important to the story. And all in the book of Nehemiah and Ezra, there's a continual noting of the Levites and their role, and they're named. Many list. These are the Levites that were a part of the leadership to come back from Babylon. These are the Levites that worked at the wall. These are the Levites that are with Nehemiah at the dedication. These are the Levites that had signed, as we looked at a couple of weeks ago, had signed that they would keep the covenant and the promise, and they would be leaders, and they would hold the people accountable, the Levites, the priesthood, that group of people who are responsible for the religious nature, or they were responsible to keep in front of the people the law of Moses and their consecration, and that they would be the people of God and God would be their people. So you have all these Levites that are here to lead the people. Many of the Levites, later on the Levites would be more scattered all throughout Israel, and in every territory or in every year there was a tribe, there would be a Levite city or a town. There would be a place where the Levites lived near the people of their tribe. By this time, the tribal system, of course, had broken down more, and even into Jesus' day, it would be less and less so that the Levites were more scattered among the people. And they would come, though, from each of those areas to serve in Jerusalem in the temple. For example, when Zechariah had come to Jerusalem, when we open the gospel account in the book of Luke, he came from his town because his town, that area, was responsible to serve in the temple for that two-week period. So for 2 weeks, the Levites from that town would come and serve in Jerusalem. Then they would go home, and then Levites from another group would come. And that's how it would be. But the Levites were always important. They're important to the story of the restoration, to the renewal, to the revival that takes place of the people. And then there's the group of the singers. And where they come from. They had built, it says in verse 27, their own towns. Interesting. Verse 28, I should say. The singers also were brought together from the region around Jerusalem, from the villages of the Netophathites, and from Beth Gilgal, and from the area of Geba and Asmaveth, for the singers had built villages for themselves around Jerusalem. We're not talking about 10 or 15 singers. We're talking about at least five towns here that are named. There is a lot of people associated with the worship in the temple, even at this time. You go back to the description of Solomon's dedication, you'll find thousands and thousands of people who are involved in the importance of the worship of the temple and keeping that in front of the people. This is just a little picture. Also in this story, we have the importance of purification, and the word is used several times here, purification. According to the law of Moses, purification was very important, that those that were leaders especially were ceremonially clean, and they had honored the law of Moses, which had been very specific about many of the rights and the responsibilities, I should say, rights, R-I-T-E-S, of purification. Purification was very important to the Jewish mindset. And ceremonial purification is important. So much so that this importance of purification, and it's mentioned here several times in the story, also carries down through this intertestamental time to the gospel story, and how important purification was to the Pharisees, and in some of the stories of interaction with Jesus. Purification, if you've not really ever studied that particular idea, but is kind of a running thread through this time period and will be, and it's very important to them to be clean symbolically. There was a physical cleanliness that was important, but it was more a symbolism of cleanliness, and of course, a moral cleanliness and purification. We've all heard the story, and you know, that's arisen mostly from oral tradition, that when the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies once a year, there was a rope tied around his foot, and if he did not cleanse himself properly, then God would strike him dead when he went into the Holy of Holies, and the rope was there to pull him out, because no one else was allowed to go in there. Again, that's kind of part of the tradition and the story of how important the ceremonial cleanliness was. And it was moral, it was physical. And in this story, we see that from the kind of at the beginning and at the end, we have a description of how the Levites cleansed themselves and they cleansed the priest. And then it says, if you look at verse 30, when the priest and Levites had purified themselves ceremonially, so you had the priest and the Levites, they purified the people. So there was then the calling of the people before they worshiped, before they were a part of this great celebration. They too were to become purified before God. Again, I don't know how they did that. I don't know what the rites were, R-I-T-E-S, rites were that they did. But there was a ceremony that they went through, and they were to be holy and pure. Again, it plays in certainly to our doctrine of holiness. And this is the whole doctrine of the purification of the Jews was a precursor to what we will understand about holiness in the New Testament and the call to holiness. And they tried to accomplish it through the washing of hands and the ceremonial washing of their hearts. But later, especially in the New Testament, we understand more about what God calls us to be as holy people. For we are to offer ourselves as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. We also believe in purification, but it's a little bit different than the Jews. Thinking about the purification as well, I'm thinking about John the Baptist and his ministry, the baptism of repentance, and how important baptism was of the people understanding that they were to come down into the water and turn from their sins and repent and then be cleansed with the rite of baptism. Near the Dead Sea is that community called Qumran, and many of you have heard of that or maybe read or studied of it, and that community that where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, and the Essene community, and just outside of the Dead Sea is this area that's been unearthed by the archaeologists, and it's a whole community that's rooted in the purification rites. And when we were there a few years ago, had the opportunity to walk through that and to read. And in this area, maybe, I don't remember, I'm just kind of bringing up a number, 250 or so people that lived in that community. And they had, I think it was 12 baptismal pools. And every day, everyone in that particular sect would be baptized 6 or 7 times. They would be baptized as soon as they got up in the morning. They would get up and they would... The baptismals were, they would walk down the steps and through the water, and they would get themselves totally immersed, and they'd walk up the other side. And that's what they did first thing in the morning. And then they would get changed, and then they would go read the Torah. After they would read the Torah, then they would go, and they would walk into the second baptismal pool, and they would be baptized. It's a rite of purification. It wasn't because they were physically dirty. It was because it was a symbol of washing away the world's stains and staying clean and pure before God. Again, it was important to who they were, and purification was important during this dedication time. I notice also, after they purified the people, then they purified the gates and the wall. I don't know how they did that. I don't know if they did that by some kind of symbolic gesture or some type of washing part of it. I don't know what they did, but they purified the gates and the wall. You wonder how they did that. And then there's that great number of musical instruments. How many can you find here? I see 5 here. Help me out. What are the 5 musical instruments that we find in this list? See if you can find them. And I'll be quiet for 10 seconds. Cymbal. What is it?
Horn.
Horn, trumpet. Lyre.
Harp.
One more. It's one that we don't think of so much as how about our voices? Our voices are an instrument. A musical instrument, how important that is in this story. Their voices. Man, choirs and singers. Singers from 4 or 5 or more towns who came together to sing. There was a lot of noise in Jerusalem on this day of dedication. In fact, we're told in verse 43, on that great day, they offered great sacrifices, rejoicing because God had given them great joy. The women and children also rejoiced. You know, they even allowed the women and children to sing that day. That's something else. You know what? When I read that, I thought of, you know, sometimes men are a little less expressive, like me, you know. How sometimes us men kind of are a little bit held back. Not always. I mean, there are exceptions. That's a general rule. But so many times I see, at least when I'm watching people, that men are just a little bit more held back, you know. And we have a lot of experience. But here they even allowed the women and the children to rejoice. And then it says, the sound of rejoicing in Jerusalem could be heard far away. Just imagine what that was like as those choirs and those people and those instruments, they made all their sounds of rejoicing, and it carried over the outside of the Temple Mount area and down over the Kidron Valley and probably up the Mount of Olives and maybe all the way to Bethany, you know, I'm thinking. And who knows how far? 6 miles to Bethlehem. I don't know how much more is there. But it says here, and it's noted that the sound of rejoicing in Jerusalem could be heard far away. I just wonder how large that was. And then you had, I mentioned these two large choirs. And you even had a choir director by name mentioned here. Two large choirs. I don't know how many people were in that choir, but there were a lot of people. They were prepared. I'm guessing they were dressed in a certain type of robes or celebratory. It just seemed like it based on everything we know and we see. So where did these two choirs go? I'm going to kind of summarize what I think I see here, and that is the first choir started. Oops, I turned it off. No, I didn't turn it off. I don't have the power to turn it off. I don't understand. Okay, the first choir, I believe if I understood right, started right down here somewhere. Because the first gate that's mentioned for the first choir is the dung gate. It says they go around here, and they go up to the water gate. And somewhere along here, they get off the wall and they go to the temple. The second choir seems to start right here, the valley gate, going the opposite direction. And they go up here, past this gate, past the fish gate, and up to the sheep gate. And either at the sheep gate or somewhere right here, they get off the wall and they come into the temple. So you have kind of a surrounding of the walls with these two choirs. Again, don't know exactly. Some names are mentioned here, so that's where you get that. But you have this surrounding of the walls by these two great choirs and the leaders that are a part of that. And so they are marching. That's why I asked you about a procession into this sanctuary. I wondered how they did it, if they all marched in together. But you guys probably didn't watch march 2 miles around Jerusalem to get, or I mean, did they? Okay. Well, that would have been Hephaniah and Jonathan and Shemaiah and whoever that is. That's one reason I wondered if Kid would remember that, because Kid was on the board when I have a picture of him standing there with a shovel when this church was, when they had the groundbreaking for the ceremony. In fact, it's in our 65th anniversary slideshow. So I wondered if he might remember that. Well, on this day, four things about that happened as we bring to a close this study of Nehemiah. Number one is the importance of understanding the sacrifices that were offered. We don't have a lot of detail about it, but this was a time that the Jews reconnected to the law of Moses and the idea of the temple being a place that people would bring their sacrifices and offer them. And of course, we read of great joy. In verse 43, if you were counting, you would see 1, 2, 3, 4 times that the word or a form of the word joy is used. Plus, back in the beginning, at verse 27, celebrate joyfully. This was a joyful, joyful time. It wasn't a time of quietness, but it was a time where there was a great inner joy and outer joy that was expressed. There was a great spirit of thanksgiving as they gave thanks to God. They knew that God had allowed this for them, and that was very special for them. And then also, the account gives us information about the importance of the tithes and offerings and how important that was to the temple and to the Levites. That was God's plan for the support of the Levites, for those that were working to take care of the sacrifices and the temple. And so you have toward the end of that, the story of that, where the people came willingly and freely, and they brought in their first fruits and their tithes. In verse 44, the storerooms, their men were appointed to be in charge of the storerooms for the contributions, first fruits and tithes. From the fields around the towns, they were to bring into the storerooms the portions required by the law for the priests and the Levites, for Judah was pleased with the ministering priests and Levites. They performed the service of their God and the service of purification, as did also the singers and gatekeepers. And so God had a plan, and Nehemiah and Ezra knew the plan, and the plan was to continue to worship him and seek him. God had a plan for how it was going to be done and who was going to be responsible. And there's a dedication of those who would take charge and responsibility. This brings to an end kind of Nehemiah's part of the story. There's one more chapter, and chapter 13 tells us of Nehemiah's final reforms. It appears to be that Nehemiah left after the dedication and went back to serve the king. The king had told him long ago, when he first told the king about the condition of Jerusalem, he said, I'll let you go back and rebuild the walls and do the work, but then you're to return and serve me. And Nehemiah did that. And then apparently, we know from the book of Ezra and the end of the book of Nehemiah that Nehemiah came back at least one more time and was able to come back and be a part of those that were in Jerusalem. And so tonight, this is our next to last study from Nehemiah next week, Lord willing. Not next week, I'm sorry. I'll be headed to Boston next week at this time, but the week after, the Sunday night after, when I'll be back. Heather will be with us for Sunday night service next week and be leading that. And then the week after, we'll come back to chapter 13 and Nehemiah's final reforms.